Third core, capabilities. Do people associate our name with quality, excellence, continuous improvement, and the ability to change to maintain our relevance in a global economy? Are we recognized as having the ability to accomplish our objectives in ways that build trust? And then the fourth core, results. Is my brand associated with results? Do people feel that we deliver what we promise? Is a good track record associated with our name? Are people willing to answer yes to what Bain consultant Frederick Reichheld calls the ultimate question, would you recommend this business to a friend? If you don't have the brand or reputation you desire, the four cores provide a great diagnostic tool to help you pinpoint the reason why and the area where investment will bring the greatest returns. You can maximize your efforts even further by analyzing your organization's performance with regard to the 13 behaviors. Consider a few examples. Talk straight. Johnson & Johnson has created direct-to-consumer education ad campaigns on prescription drugs in which they communicate candidly and treat consumers as educated adults. This kind of straight talk is one reason why Johnson & Johnson remains the highest-rated brand on the reputation quotient list. Create transparency. eBay CEO Meg Whitman and her team lead what she describes as a dynamic self-regulating economy in the complete openness of the World Wide Web. According to Business Week Online, rather than controlling or hoarding information, eBay has chosen to let their citizens have full access to every trend, every sell, every new regulation in the eBay world. The system is utterly transparent. Listen first. Super Quinn, a grocery chain and shopping mall operator in Ireland, has built an empire based on what they call a multi-channel listening system. This system includes regular customer panels, customer comment forms, formal market research, a service desk in every store, and personal calls to participants in their loyalty program. Through listening, Super Quinn has gained insights that have led to its being a pioneer in food safety and providing innovative customer services. The organization dominates the market, even in competition against much bigger rivals. As I've said, it's at this fourth wave, marketplace trust, that most people already see the connection between trust and reputation to bottom line economics. That's because most understand the value of a brand. What most don't see as clearly, however, is that the same principle that produces dividends to a trusted company at the level of market trust also operates at the self-trust, relationship trust, and organizational trust levels. So, in addition to whatever trust issues we might address with regard to our companies, schools, not-for-profits, families, or other organizations we represent, we need to ask, first and foremost, what is my reputation? What is my brand? Am I a walking tax or a walking dividend? Keep in mind, whatever trust we are able to create in our organizations and in the marketplace is a result of the credibility we first create in ourselves. The fifth wave, societal trust. Perhaps you've heard the French proverb, fish discover water last. But have you ever really thought about what that means? For fish, water simply is. It's their environment. It surrounds them. They are so immersed in its presence, they're unaware of its existence until it becomes polluted or non-existent. Then, the immediate and dramatic consequence makes it quickly apparent that quality water is absolutely essential for their well-being. Without it, the fish will die. In a similar way, we as human beings discover trust last. Trust is an integral part of the fabric of our society. We depend upon it. We take it for granted unless it becomes polluted or destroyed. Then we come to the stark realization that trust may be as vital to our own well-being as water is to a fish. Without trust, society closes down and will ultimately self-destruct. It's hard to even imagine a world without trust. As Thomas Friedman contends in The World is Flat, trust is essential to to a flat or open society. And the principal aim of terrorists is to destroy that trust. It's to make us fearful of doing the things we do every day. Just think about the taxes imposed in a closed, low-trust society. Then think about all the dividends, such as shared knowledge, medical breakthroughs, technological advances, economic partnerships, and cultural exchanges that are not available to a closed society. In a high-trust society, there's more for everyone. We have more options and opportunities. We interact with less friction, resulting in greater speed and lower cost. This is why our opportunity to build a high-trust society is so meaningful. There is nothing we could do that would so dramatically impact not only speed and cost, but also quality of life for everyone on the planet. The overriding principle of societal trust is contribution. It's the intent to create value instead of destroy it, to give back instead of take. Today, more and more businesses, as well as individuals, are recognizing the value of contribution. Many businesses are structured to contribute to others on a regular basis, such as Newman's Own Products, established by actor Paul Newman, which has generated profits in excess of $200 million, all of which has been donated to charities. Business Ethics Magazine annually publishes its 100 Best Corporate Citizens, which recognizes companies that serve all stakeholders with excellence and integrity. In 2006, corporate giants such as Intel, Wells Fargo, Texas Instruments, and General Mills were all in the top 20. While many meaningful contributions still come in the form of the industrial age notion of philanthropy, that is, earning profits and then donating money to worthwhile causes, the trend today is turning toward the more comprehensive knowledge worker age paradigm of global citizenship. This approach includes traditional philanthropy, but it also integrates the social and ethical agenda into the very fabric of the business. Doing good is no longer seen as something in addition to business. It is a part of business itself. At the heart of organizational global citizenship is individual global citizenship. It's you and me making the conscious decision to value and invest in the well-being of others. It's you and me carrying out that decision in every dimension of our lives. As Gandhi said, one man cannot do right in one department of life whilst he is occupied in doing wrong in another department. Life is one indivisible whole. So we don't urge our employees to give incredible service to our paying customers, toss a few corporate dollars to charity, and then ignore an unpaying neighbor in need. When we do that, we compartmentalize our lives, and the message that comes across to employees and family members alike is that contribution is token or for show, and if the time comes that they don't have what we want or need, they, like our neighbor, can become irrelevant. In addition, our inconsistent behavior, acting one way in one situation and a different way in another, comes across as hypocrisy and creates a huge tax. Instead, we focus on developing true global citizenship in all dimensions of our lives, starting from the inside out. We come back to the four cores, and we start with self. Am I credible? Do I have intent to do good, to contribute, to give back? Do I give to society a person they can trust? Then we move to family. We ask, do I exercise the leadership in my family that inspires and helps family members to become good global citizens? Do I set the example? Am I a good citizen within my own family as well as in the world? Then we move to our organizations. We ask, is our organization credible? Do we have integrity and do we model it in our behavior? Do we demonstrate intent to do good, to contribute, to give back? Do we have the capabilities to make a difference? Do we produce results, not only for shareholders, but for all stakeholders? Do we give to society an organization they can trust? We look at the 13 behaviors. We ask, do I, or does my organization or my family, talk straight, demonstrate respect, create transparency, right wrongs, show loyalty, deliver results, get better, confront reality, Clarify expectations. Practice accountability. Listen first. Keep commitments. Extend trust. If we have on our glasses to see, we realize that it's at this societal level that the words of psychologist Carl Rogers become clear. That which is most personal is most general. We see that trust at the fifth wave is a direct result of trustworthiness that begins in the first wave and flows outward in our relationships, in our organizations, and in the marketplace to fill society as a whole. By now, I hope you're convinced that, as I've said, nothing is as fast as the speed of trust. Nothing is as profitable as the economics of trust. Nothing is as relevant as the pervasive impact of trust. And the dividends of trust can significantly enhance the quality of every relationship on every level of your life. But you may still be hesitant or fearful when it comes to actually extending trust to others. Maybe deep down you really feel that other people can't be trusted. Maybe you grew up in a low-trust environment. Maybe you've been burned in the past. Maybe no one has ever extended trust meaningfully to you. I want to show you that, whatever your situation, you can learn how to extend smart trust. You can develop the competence to extend trust in ways that avoid the pitfalls and ensure the greatest dividends for all concerned. You can also learn how to restore trust when it's been lost, and how to develop the propensity to trust that is absolutely vital to effective leadership and life. To this end, we have developed what we call the Smart Trust Matrix. You'll find this matrix detailed on our website, speedoftrust.com. By applying this matrix, you can learn to manage risk to make extending trust more possible. You'll learn how to leverage your own propensity to trust and that of others to maximize the speed of trust in your life and your organization. And you'll learn how to analyze, evaluate, theorize, consider implications and possibilities, and come up with logical decisions and solutions regarding the development and restoration of trust. I urge you to take advantage of this resource. There's no getting around the fact that in today's flat global economy, trust is essential to prosperity. In our personal and family relationships, trust is essential to satisfaction and joy. And the truth is that we can establish it. We can grow it. We can extend it. We can restore it. We can become personally and organizationally credible. We can behave in ways that inspire trust. We can increase speed and lower cost in every dimension of our lives. So why would we not want to do it? Why would we not want to live and lead in ways that inspire trust? Perhaps Albert Schweitzer said it best. In everybody's life, at some time, our inner fire goes out. It is then burst into flame by an encounter with another human being. We should all be thankful for those people who rekindle the inner spirit. Extending trust to others rekindles the inner spirit, both theirs and ours. It touches and enlightens the innate propensity we all have to trust and to be trusted. It brings happiness to relationships, results to work, and confidence to lives. Above all, it produces an extraordinary dividend in every dimension of our lives, the speed of trust.
The Speed of Trust was written and read by Stephen M. R. Covey. The recording engineer was Greg Duckwitz at Solarium Studios in Alpine, Utah. Editing and post-production by Robin Wise at Sound Imagery in Santa Rosa, California. The associate producer was Travis Tun. The Speed of Trust was produced, directed, and adapted for audio by Jesse Boggs. This has been a presentation of Simon & Schuster Audio.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.